On my business card, I am a corporate president. In my mind, I am a game developer. But in my heart, I am a gamer.
And welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and you're listening to Radio DMG on May 31st, 2014. We're less than 15 days away from Denver Comic Con 2014 and less than 10 days away from E3 2014. And there is a lot of news that will be coming out. There's been some news beforehand, like Nintendo announcing Pushmo World, or Pool Blocks, or Crash, whatever, like, whatever that franchise is called. They're doing a Wii U version. It's not a port, it's a brand new game, and if you own the previous two in Japan and Europe, and they haven't announced this yet for North America, but if you own the previous two, there's a small discount on buying the one for the Wii U, which is kind of cool. They also announced a GameCube controller adapter for the Nintendo Wii U. It plugs two USB cables into the front of your Wii U, and it has four controller ports. It'll work with the GameCube controllers, which they're going to be making Smash Brothers branded ones, and to the WaveBird controller, which they're also re-releasing. So that should be interesting. Of course, the one they re-release will be Smash Brothers and Wii U branded, so should be neat. Also, that kind of coincides with what we're doing this episode of Radio DMG. Well, excavating through some older CDs and older hard drives, I came across a recorded conference call that we had recorded for Radio DMG a long, long time ago. I think it was part of our coverage at one point. I just didn't have any place to actually host it. You see, a long, long time ago, all of DMG Ice had to fit into 256 megabytes of space. Megabytes. Actually, even before that, it was, at one point, it was 128 megabytes of space that we had to play with. And this was back in like 2001, 2003. And then they, they expanded it to 256. And then eventually we just dumped that hosting place entirely and went with a better host. And the better host gives us pretty much infinite space, which is kind of nice. So now we have the room to host these, and why not? So what we're going to be playing is the Space World conference call with Peter Main and several other members of the media. There's a little spiel from Peter Main, the previous president of Nintendo of America, before Reggie Fils-Aimé took over. Now, Peter Main is a pretty awesome guy, and it's kind of interesting when you look at some of the rhetoric they had leading up to the launch of the GameCube and the launch of the Game Boy Advance. Because at this point, there are two devices that they're talking about. Also, you get to hear a Q&A with a bunch of people that you might recognize. There's Andrew Vestal, Inge Croy, Adam Sessler, quite a few people. And you'd be surprised how little these people change. I mean, when given the chance to ask about the GameCube, Adam Sessler makes his question all about the Xbox, which is kind of hilarious. Oh, I think Jeff Keighley's in here too. I'm trying to remember. I'd have to go through it again. But yeah, there's some really funny mistakes. You'll hear some of these questions where it's like they already mentioned the answer to it in a previous question, but someone still asks it. Just pretty interesting. You get to hear Adam Sessler mess up the name of the GameCube. I mean, it's the GameCube. For some bizarre reason, he starts referring to it as the Star Cube. It's quite amusing because, well, whatever. But yeah, that's part of our feature today. We're going to do that feature. And I think I've got another bit here with Ken Lobb. I'm trying to remember when this one is. It was another recorded, I think this was a recorded session with Ken Lobb from E3 one year we recorded it. I'm trying to remember where I got that one from. That one will be right after the Peter Main presentation. Ken Lobb used to work with Nintendo, then he left and joined up with, I think, Microsoft at one point. I think the same with, yeah. So those are interesting, and that's what we've got in this episode. So let's cue the music.
Call ID is 533-100. The date of the call is August 24th, 2000. The time is 9 a.m. Central Time.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Space World 2000 conference call. At this time, all lines are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star zero. And as a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Nintendo of America, Mr. Peter Main. Please go ahead.
Hello, I'm Peter Main, and with me tonight is Jim Merrick, Nintendo of America's Technical Director. For the next 15 minutes or so, I'd like to review what Nintendo Company Limited announced a few hours ago here in Tokyo, to an enthusiastic crowd of over 2,500 industry insiders at the preview to the Space World 2000 trade show, which opens tomorrow, and then to provide a little bit of time to answer your questions. At the outset, let me say this. In order to fully grasp what Nintendo has announced today, it's going to be necessary to alter the way you think about interactive entertainment. On one level, we have unveiled two new 21st century gameplay systems today, the formerly named Project Dolphin, now to be called by its formal name, the Nintendo GameCube, and Game Boy Advance, a major leap forward from the incredibly successful Game Boy franchise. When these game machines reach market, they will constitute the most technically advanced console and the most technically advanced portable system ever brought to market. The technology will always improve, so to focus only on individual specifications would miss the point, because the real news of this week is about something very different. Not just two industry-best machines and how they've been engineered individually, but in a much more significant sense, how they've been engineered to work together. Yes, at launch, each system will be the most powerful in its respective category, but when they're combined, players will experience gameplay that is both unprecedented and uniquely Nintendo. In fact, we believe the combined impact of the Nintendo GameCube and the Nintendo Game Boy Advance will ultimately alter the definition of the term video game. Maybe a description like alternative video reality will be closer to the fact. In any case, for those who claim that video games already are too engrossing, too involving, too compelling, I'm afraid we've got bad news. Because with these two new systems, Nintendo intends to make them a more involving, more integrated part of your leisure time than ever before. When our friends at Sony unveiled the PlayStation 2, they asked you not to define them simply as a video game machine, but as the centerpiece of a new model for home entertainment. Well, we're also asking you to define us differently, but in the opposite direction. Not bigger and all-encompassing, but even more laser-focused on one thing, making the video games experience better and different than ever before. We understand the theory behind competing machines, which are designed to meet a variety of entertainment needs, and those machines may well serve a worthy purpose, much the same way that millions of Americans buy minivans to meet a variety of transportation needs. But our technology is designed to do only one thing well, and that is to play great video games. And in the process, we're establishing a far friendlier environment for game developers to create those games. Our mission was to create maximum speed, maximum handling, maximum excitement, just for gameplay. So if the other guys are building minivans, Nintendo has set out to build Ferraris, and that's exactly what we've done. But building that horsepower and maneuverability into two separate vehicles was only the first step in accomplishing our mission. The second was to make the systems run as a team, and in the process to make entirely new and richer forms of video games possible. And we're doing that too. Because we were determined to create a game universe that is in line with three clear demands of cutting-edge entertainment and technology. First, more control for the user. What matters is what the player wants, not what we would like to give him. Secondly, a deeper experience. We all know people who can't get enough pro wrestling or enough Stephen King or enough MTV. Video game players, if anything, are even more fanatical. They want to get even deeper into their games. And thirdly, just look around at where technology is headed. Where just a couple of years ago, wired was the universal goal. Now it's unwired. We still want our email and our websites and our personal entertainment, but we want it wherever we go, not just connected to our PC. The combination of GameCube and Game Boy Advance will make possible Nintendo video games that truly meet each of these demands. So that's the overview, and let me now briefly deal with what we've created. The centerpiece of the Space World show that opens tomorrow is Game Boy Advance. This positioning is not an oversight nor an accident, and here's why. Consider one statistic, namely the ratio of video game systems around the world for the last couple of years comparing all handheld system sales to all home console sales. In 1998, for every three portable game systems sold, which were virtually all Game Boys, there were seven consoles sold, a ratio of 3 to 7, and I guess that's just about what you might have assumed. But last year, even with the presence of Dreamcast, that ratio evened up at 1 to 1. In other words, globally, just as many Game Boy hardware sales took place as all console hardware combined. And of course, this year, with the advent of PlayStation 2 in Japan, that number predictably has changed, but not in the direction you might assume. Counting from January 1st until today, around the world, we've seen more portable system sales than all consoles combined. Think about that for a moment. What's going on here? Are the Dreamcast and PS2 truly cutting edge? Well, we're not here to argue that they're not, but Game Boy Color, based on 11-year-old 8-bit technology, is clearly outselling all consoles combined. Why, you ask? Well, we believe it's because of that third point I mentioned, namely people's intent on getting unplugged. Many are choosing anywhere, anytime, even at the cost of fancier 3D graphics. And this is why Game Boy Advance is so important to our plans. Obviously, games designed for Game Boy Advance will look worlds better than what Game Boy Color can do. The screen is 50% larger. Pixels have been increased by 60%. The memory is 6 times larger. The clock speed is up 17 times, and there's no way I can begin to talk to you about the significant improvement that's taken place in the sound system. There are 10 playable Game Boy Advance games on the floor at Space World this week. The launch date in Japan has now been announced as March the 21st to assure that adequate supplies of what we know will be crushing demand, and the retail price for Japan has been set at 9,800 yen, or about $90 US. Next, let me also give you a recap of what we also disclosed and displayed about the new, officially named Nintendo GameCube. Nintendo GameCube is a dynamo in a very small package. It measures only 6 inches by 6 inches by 4 inches. And if you're interested in seeing it for yourself, A photo is now available at Nintendo.com. It plays games on proprietary 1.5 gigabyte optical discs from Matsusa, with discs that are just a little more than 3 inches in diameter. Visitors to the Space World preview today saw 10 different hardware demonstrations, including footage of key Nintendo characters, including Mario, Luigi, Pokemon, Zelda, and Metroid. However, none of these demonstrations should be considered final game projects. While the cube is little, what's inside clearly is not. The 405 megahertz IBM central processor has been modified in 5 significant ways to optimize gameplay. The ATI graphics chip has MOSES 1T SRAM memory embedded directly on it, and it can handle highly compressed data formats for the purpose of optimizing gameplay. There's a total of 40 megabits of main memory, including one of the largest implementations of static memory in any consumer product, again, just to optimize gameplay. The controller has 2 analog joysticks with an integrated rumble motor and left and right buttons, which have a range of 255 distinct increments between off and fully depressed. Again, all of this to optimize gameplay. We have also announced that the Nintendo GameCube will again have 4 controller ports, and we will offer an optional WaveBird wireless controller, which will function at a range of up to 30 feet. There are slots for 4 megabyte digicards to save game data, connections for digital media, and provisions for a current 56K and future broadband adapter. This flexibility is also designed to optimize gameplay, but we're not yet prepared to disclose those details this week. We're absolutely thrilled with what the engineers have built into both Game Boy Advance and GameCube, but as I mentioned, to look at them separately as a new console and a new handheld is only half of the story. It's what they can do together that is, in our mind, the industry's most meaningful innovation ever announced for real game players. In its simplest form, the Game Boy Advance acts as a controller for the GameCube. That means you can use the GBA's high-res display with, for example, a sports game to privately select your offense play in football or your pitch in baseball, or in a racing game to modify your vehicle, or in an action game to alter your power-ups and your life bars. Next, you can share data from characters, teams, to abilities between the two systems, and then continue gameplay even after you leave the house. And the final step? Well, there is no final step yet, because the uses of this gameplay tandem is limited only by the imaginations of game developers, and the fact that each of these systems has been optimized for gameplay has the development community beyond excited. This is the kind of interactive experience that meet the 3 trends that I mentioned. It's entertainment, fully controlled by the user. It's so immersive, it's almost an alternative life. And finally, it's entertainment that can go unwired, unplugged from everything. Games can be designed to follow you anywhere, anytime. Nintendo GameCube arrives in Japan next July and in North America next October, and the suggested retail price for all territories will be disclosed closer to the launch dates. Dozens of games are underway around the world as we speak, but by design, none is being shown here in Tokyo this week. I can assure you that what we've seen so far is astounding, but there are obviously good reasons in this competitive market for us to hold our cards close to our chest for just a little bit longer. The best news for all of you back home in America is that just as the full formal coming out party for Game Boy Advance is taking place here in Tokyo this week, the corresponding debutante ball for the Nintendo GameCube will occur at E3 in Los Angeles next May. That's when playable software will first be presented and when the world will get its first full look at what this new console by itself and in conjunction with Game Boy Advance can really do. And I promise you this, things you never imagined are on their way. I want to thank you for your attention. For press materials or more information, you can contact Allison Holt at area code 213-623 4200 or visit www.nintendo.com. And now, without further delay, let Jim and I answer your questions, and the operator will now take over.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the 1 on your touch-tone phone. You'll hear a tone indicating you've been placed in queue. You may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before dialing. And our first question comes from the line of Victor Godinez with Dallas Morning News. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering, you mentioned that the Game Boy Advance and the GameCube will be connectable, and I was wondering what sort of interface you're going to use to connect it to. Is it a wireless or a wired interface? How does it work?
It's a wired interface connecting from the controller port on the front of the GameCube system to the GameLink connector on Game Boy.
Okay.
Thank you. We now have a question from the line of Marge Costello with CE Online News. Please go ahead.
Hi. You mentioned that the new GameCube will use a 3-inch optical disc. Could you please share with us your thinking as to why DVD video support was not something you wanted to offer? And could you explain how this will impact your relationship with Matsushita and their plans to incorporate this in future products? Thank you.
Well, again, as Peter stated, our focus is really to create the ultimate gaming machine here. And it's not our goal to be a home multimedia appliance, and in that context, a DVD player. This 3-inch media that we have selected is really optimal for gameplay for a number of reasons, not the least of which is anti-piracy, which has been rampant in this industry.
How will this impact your relationship with Matsushita when they incorporate it in products?
Well, Matsushita has been a very close partner in the development of both the disc and the manufacturing technology for the disc. We have announced previously that we expect a hybrid device to be produced by Matsushita at some point downstream that is capable of functioning both as a DVD player and as a GameCube video game console. But again, that is at some point downstream. We're really focusing on the core product today, the GameCube.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Judith Abrams with Tech Intelligence. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Can you talk a bit about the discs and what kind of encryption technology are going to be used on them and how it will prevent them from being able to be played in, say, a DVD video or DVD-ROM player?
Well, certainly the physical size being a 3-inch disc will prevent a lot of it, but the specifics of our encryption technology, I think it would not be wise to discuss it in great detail.
Okay. I mean, can you tell if it was something developed by Matsushita or if it was developed internally?
It was developed primarily by Matsushita in connection with Nintendo, cognizant of what our needs are in the video game industry.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. We now have a question from John Taylor with Arcadia Investment Corporation. Please go ahead.
Hi. I got a couple of questions if I can. One, Peter, do you expect to have the modem and cards and all that stuff, all the peripheral things available day and date with the launcher? Are you going to let the platform get out there to start with and then come back with the peripherals later?
We expect to have most of the peripherals. The broadband adapter is intended for a future release. The modem, the DigiCard adapter, there's a DigiCard to SD card. This provides for support of a standard flash memory card, as well as Nintendo's own DigiCard and the WaveBird wireless controller would all be available at launch.
Okay, the modem will be available at launch?
That's correct.
Okay, and then can you talk at all about, of the dozens of games that Peter mentioned, do you have any games that are server-based that are specifically designed for online play at this point?
Really not prepared to talk about our network strategy at this point.
Okay. Last question. Development kits for the Cube. Can you talk about how many have gone out and maybe how many you expect to go out, say, by the end of this calendar year? Thanks.
Well, there are a number of developers worldwide that have access to development tools for GameCube today, and we're increasing that number on a daily basis. Certainly a lot of interest was shown today from the trade and the industry that was attending the show, the pre-show today. I think that in the near term, we're going to have a tough time satisfying the demand that we're seeing, the enthusiastic support that we're seeing for GameCube, but we'll continue to produce them at as high a rate as we can.
So are the kits pretty much finalized at this point, or are you still sort of putting the tools together?
The development kits are in a constant state of flux. I mean, we recently rev the tools for N64 only about a month ago, so they're always changing. Tools that are available for developers today are fully functional and they're able to complete game development.
Okay, thank you.
John, just to put perspective on it, there's over two dozen developers in possession of tools at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Edward Williams with Gerard Clower Mattis. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is actually Tom Andrews filling in for Edward. Can you comment on how many units you might expect to have for the Game Boy Advance at launch?
Japan today announced that for the domestic market, they would launch with 1 million units the first 30 days. They also announced that our production capacity, which has been running at about 1.5 million a month over the past 18 months or 2 years, would increase to 2.5 million a month. And I would expect that when we launch in the U.S., that number would have built to at least the number being seen in the domestic market here.
Okay, great. And also, can you comment on what the lead time for disk manufacturing is versus what it is for standard CD-ROMs?
We can't be specific about that, but it's in the same range.
Same range. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from the line of Mia Kroll with Newsweek. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the time. When I spoke with some people at Nintendo last year around Sony's announcement, you guys said that you would have, when you guys show, that you would have actual game demonstrations and not tech demos. What happened?
This is Peter again. We made a conscious decision to, as I said in my remarks, keep our cards close to our chest. There's a lot of product that is well advanced, and we plan to show those cards a lot closer to launch date. As you know, it's a competitive environment. We learned some lessons with early demos with N64, and we'll be surprising the world as we come to market.
To follow on that a little bit, NGuy, the demos that were shown today were much more in the game context. They were not strict, isolated technology demos.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from the line of Renee San Miguel with CNBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, for both Peter or Jim, you've got all these units that you've got coming out here over the next year to 18 months. I'm wondering about how your component issues, a lot of the tech companies out there are having to deal with either current shortages or impending shortages, they believe, of chips and memory and all kinds of various controllers within the devices. Because you're talking about some new technology here, can you give us a kind of a forecast of the component issues that you're going to be facing over the next year?
Well, the most conspicuous component issue that we've had has been our inability to satisfy the demand for Game Boy worldwide. As Peter alluded to, we're currently producing 1.5 million a month and increasing that to 2.5 million. We think we have these issues addressed. Our partnerships on GameCube and on Game Boy Advance have been very careful partnerships with long-term companies that we've worked with for years in NEC and Matsushita and Sharp, and I think we're confident we're going to be able to deliver.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Adam Sessler with Tech TV. Please go ahead.
Yes. The release date for the GameCube in the USA being in October, that seems to be very close to the assumed release date for Microsoft's Xbox. Does Nintendo have any strategies to be able to compete with that during that same time period?
I think the key to our strategies is our absolute belief that we are going to bring very best software to market, which will drive the ultimate success. So whatever date our competitor chooses to arrive, we feel with what is already well under development and projects that are being initiated, we're going to be well positioned to take on whoever is in the marketplace at that point.
Thank you. Our next question comes from PJ McNeely with Gartner Group. Please go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. I have two questions for you. The first would be, what is the profile of the buyer for each device, and has the GameCube buyer profile actually gotten a little bit younger? That's the first question. The second question is, actually, as a follow-up to the Microsoft question, has their announcement back in March had any effect on the specs for the GameCube?
Your first question about demographics, the Game Boy Advance will obviously build on the very successful profile that we've built and established for Game Boy and Game Boy Color. And that probably is the broadest demos in the industry was roughly a third, a third, a third, 12 and under, 13 to 18, and 19 plus. And it also balances about 60-40 male to female as contrasted with an industry that's more like 80-20. On GameCube, while the world assumed that N64 had trended somewhat younger, we're in fact about 38% over the age of 18, somewhat in contrast to Sony, which is just over 50% over the age of 18, with the balance spread equally between the middle two groups. We believe clearly that building on our successful franchises, which are built on the nature and quality of software that we brought to market, is a very, very strong starting point. But I'd quickly add to that that you will be seeing more product position against the teen and adult groups at time of launch with the GameCube than certainly was the case with N64, and hence a broader demo distribution on that product. Your question about altering the specs, this project has been under development for approximately 5 years. The specs did not alter. We've had a clear-cut commitment from day one that this was going to be purely a gaming device. Other people may look to it as a licensing opportunity for broader application, but we were going to engineer it against purely a gaming device and building upon the tremendous learning that we've done over the 8-bit, 16-bit, and 64-bit experiences. We think we've delivered that in spades, and it'll now be up to the rest of the world who are deciding to only partially focus on gaming while creating devices designed to do many other things to, in fact, compete with us in the pure gaming arena.
Okay. As a follow-up on the profile, on the GameCube, the profile, has it changed, though, from the N64? Because it would seem that it would get younger because it could work with the Game Boy Advance.
The intent is that the demos will be, albeit not 60-40 male-female, could more closely approximate a 40% 18-plus and the balance split between the other two groups. And that's a function of early adapters coming in and then, of course, growing it with our conventional character-based franchises.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Shelley Olhava with ITC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I actually have a couple of questions. My first question involves the wireless controller. Can you tell me what technology that's based on?
It's a RF technology. It's not infrared. Specific frequency, I'm not sure.
Okay. My second question actually is a follow-up to the demographics. If I look at the competitive picture, we know that the PlayStation 2 will have been out for about a year, which clearly targets the teenage and the over 18 audience. How do you feel that the Nintendo GameCube will be able to stack up against the PS2, which will have the advantage of having been out in the market for at least a year by the time your next generation system comes out?
First of all, I think the assumption that PS2 has been a runaway success since launch is a misconception. While it has sold approximately 3 million pieces of hardware, fully 50% of the hardware sold has yet to see one game sold against it as it's being marketed as a DVD player in this marketplace. Our focus, again, is on a pure gaming machine. Those kind of results in this market over the 5 months since launch are not impressive in the game market. So we believe, again, that the software will determine the ultimate winner, be it Sony, Microsoft, Sega or Nintendo, and we are absolutely convinced that the developer-friendly and, importantly, gamer-friendly nature of our architecture is going to stand up to any of those with our tremendous history of understanding what it takes to create and execute a solid gaming product.
Okay, and my final question actually involves the name. Clearly, a lot of traction has been developed among gamers with the Nintendo Dolphin brand, or the working name that it worked under. What about, do you think that you will lose any traction among gamers with the final name Game Boy Cube, or I'm sorry, Nintendo GameCube?
No, we don't. We've historically used a code name throughout the development process, and Now the critical marketing job is to build the personality around GameCube, which very appropriately describes what it is, what it looks like, and what it's intended to do. And that personality will emanate from the phenomenal lineups of software that will be supportive of it. So Dolphin clearly was a code name. GameCube will be the real name, and will build its personality very quickly.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Andrew Vessel with Gamers.com. Please go ahead.
Yes, quick question for you guys. I was just wondering if Nintendo has any plans to include the modem with the GameCube at launch, to pack it in the box.
I don't believe that's the intent at this moment.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from Victor Godinez. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if the Game Boy Advance will be backward compatible with Game Boy, Game Boy Color games, and how, if you're going to continue developing games for those two older handheld platforms.
Yes, a very important aspect. And building on that 100 million plus units that we sold of Game Boy and Game Boy Color, there is full backward compatibility. And as for the future of the older platforms, time will tell. We certainly will be supporting Game Boy Color for the foreseeable future, and all those libraries will be transferable to Game Boy Advance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from John Taylor with Arcadia Investment Corporation. Please go ahead.
Hi. Do you guys anticipate, given the fact that you can kind of link these things together and introduce a whole new style of gameplay, can you talk at all about where Nintendo first-party software might take this? And I guess one way to ask the question is, are there new genres that are going to come out of this, or do you think Nintendo is going to focus on a genre, you know, like sports or, you know, another category that has not been a key focus of software development in the past? I'm talking specifically about first-party investment here.
I think that the conventional genre, action-adventure, sports, racing, will continue to attract very, very strong followings. The presentation on GameCube and Game Boy Advance, by virtue of the architecture, we believe will be more compelling. Our activities over the past couple of years in developing modifications on genres, best exemplified by the Pokemon family, I think you can expect to see more of. But the whole aspect of connecting them together, using Game Boy Advance as a controller on Nintendo GameCube, this is really building very aggressively on the multiplayer aspect that has been a very, very key part of our business these past years, and why four ports are built into the unit. And I think you can get your mind around the multiplayer aspect of it more so than brand new genres, John.
Okay. And do you expect Nintendo's first-party market share on the software side to be significantly different next time around than it has been recently?
That's difficult to answer at the moment. First and second party certainly will probably be out of the chute a little faster than the full complement of third-party developers that we expect. But we're really excited with the tremendous level of expression of interest by developers around the world in both these platforms. And as follow-up to launch, we'll see probably stronger third-party support than we've seen in the past few years.
The key Japanese developers got off to a slow start on N64. Do you expect that to be different this time?
I think that third-party developers generally, both in Japan and elsewhere in the world, will be into these platforms faster than was the case with N64.
Yeah, to expand on that a little bit, John, it really supports one of our key design objectives on GameCube was to create a developer-friendly environment, something that is fast and efficient to develop software for, and we think we've accomplished that in spades on GameCube. The reaction from the developers who have access to the tools has supported that notion.
Okay, and on the technical front, can you talk at all about the API that you're using for this?
well, like the rest of the machine, it is purpose-built for video gaming. It is not a standard per se, but is not particularly unique either. It's relatively easy to move your code over to it from other APIs.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Suzanne Cantrell with Popular Science. Please go ahead.
Thank you. When the Game Boy Advance is plugged into the GameCube, can you use the TV as a display to play Game Boy Advance games?
While technically possible, and it's something that you see even in Pokemon Stadium on N64 when you plug either Pokemon Red or Blue into the transfer pack on Pokemon Stadium, it's technically possible, but I'm not sure that's an objective, design objective for it at this point. I really wouldn't presume to predict what some of our game designers might do with this technology downstream.
Okay, so you didn't design it for possible multiplayer games for Game Boy Advance around the television?
I'm not quite sure I follow your question. I mean, you can play a multiplayer game using Game Boy Advance as the controller for GameCube, but it would be a GameCube game that you are playing.
Okay, thank you.
The Game Boy Advance, we are marketing it with a cable that allows you to connect up to four Game Boy Advances together so that you can play up to four players head-to-head on Game Boy Advance.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Mike Wallace with UBS Warburg. Your line is open.
Hi. Two questions. First, since you are not cartridge-based anymore, can we assume that the royalties for the new system will be comparable to where Sony and Microsoft will be? And second, with regard to the Game Boy Advance, will there be any wireless capabilities that will let those communicate with each other outside of the GameCube?
On the licensing side, we're not really prepared to disclose what the business model will be on that. We have said that we'll be competitive. I guess we'll have to see that as we move downstream. To answer your wireless question, we have announced an infrared adapter for Game Boy Advance to provide infrared connectivity, and we are looking into all sorts of alternatives. Shown here today at the preview show was the mobile Game Boy adapter that allows you to connect Game Boy Color to wireless phones here in Japan, and I think that's really the tip of the iceberg of the sort of things we might be able to do with Game Boy Advance.
Thank you. We now have a follow-up question from Adam Sessler with Tech TV. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. One more question regarding the N64. How much support does Nintendo intend to give that console system after the launch of StarCube, primarily in the form of software being released?
I think we've looked back to SNES following the launch of N64. We sold in the months following the launch of N64 about another million pieces of hardware and 5 or 6 million pieces of software, of brand new software. And I think you'll see an overlap probably in the 12 to 18 month range that would be repeated again.
Do you anticipate that there will be new software after the release of StarCube, new software for the N64?
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
Oh, okay.
And that is new. We've sold probably 20 million pieces of software in total, but much of that in our library.
All right.
Thank you. We also have a follow-up question from Mia Kroll with Newsweek. Go ahead.
Hi. Following up on the issue of third-party support, I know you haven't released anything about which games will be coming out, but can we pretty much expect that at launch, that the launch titles will pretty much be first and second party only? Will there be any third party support, like on day and date with launch?
Well, I think it remains to be seen. We're a ways out from the launch. I think there's every possibility that third parties would have titles available at launch. There's nothing that would preclude them from doing so.
And secondly, is Square back on board?
We're interested in all third parties, and I'd like to leave it at that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Ken Lee with Industry Standards. Go ahead, please.
I apologize if this was addressed earlier, but you mentioned that Game Boy Advance, at least the demo in Tokyo today, includes a connection to cell phones, a connection to wireless phones. Will that functionality be available for the U.S. market, and will that cable be sold as a peripheral or be packed in the box?
The mobile Game Boy adapter that's being shown here today actually is working with Game Boy Color, and will also work with Game Boy Advance downstream. That technology is based on some of the unique cellular technology that's available here in Japan, PHS, or personal handy phone, and J-phone technology. We are looking into ways to bring that capability to North American and European markets, but it's a little bit more of a difficult problem. We have more widely dispersed population centers and many more variety of wireless telecommunications, so it's a little bit tougher problem outside the Japanese market, but we are looking into it.
Is it a proprietary adapter port built into the Game Boy Advance?
It is an enhanced version of the GameLink interface that's been available on Game Boy.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Chris Morris with CNN. Please go ahead.
It seems that there's no backward compatibility with the GameCube, and I'm wondering if so, why not, and if this was ever considered.
We've obviously changed media with GameCube, and this de facto prevents that from occurring. Historically, as we've moved from 8 to 16 and 16 to 64, while we also did remain with the same media, the challenge was delivering anything new to the consumer by way of game enhancement, which is very difficult to do, or if not impossible. So in this case, the change in media absolutely prevents it from being a possibility.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Marge Costello with CE Online News. Please go ahead.
Yes, I'm looking at the specs on the web, and I have a couple of questions about GameCube, and number one, its audio format that it supports, and secondly, I'd like to find out about what type of, what level of, let's say, HDTV or future DTV do you support with GameCube? Because I see something on the website here about a Nintendo GameCube digital video cable, which seems geared for Japan. Could you comment on, you know, digital audio, and digital video output?
The digital audio supports Dolby Surround as is available on the audio output. The digital output for video, you're correct, this cable is for the Japanese market, the standard, D terminal connection here.
You said Dolby, did you say Dolby Surround or Dolby Digital?
Dolby Surround, not Dolby Digital.
And what is the video output of the GameCube? What are you at the equivalent of 720p, 1080i? What are you at the equivalent of?
Most of the games will probably run at a 640 by 480 resolution, which is a good compromise between PAL and NTSC standards.
Mm-hmm. So you're at VGA levels?
Yes.
And one last question. Is the cube only available in purple, or are you going to have it in several colors?
It was shown today in five different colors.
Oh, okay.
The launch colors are still to be determined.
Okay, so the picture on the web is not the only color. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We now have a question from Ed McLaughlin with GIA. Please go ahead.
Hello. What prompted Nintendo to pursue wireless controller technology on their own at this stage?
Well, I think it's a maturation of the technology. It's something that I think a lot of people have always desired to have a wireless controller, but there have been issues with the wireless technology that have been available previously. So we just reached a point at which that technology had matured and to the point where Nintendo was willing to put our brand on it.
Now, was it true that many of the demos yesterday that were controllable, the Nintendo staff actually used the wireless technology?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Dennis McCauley with Philadelphia Inquirer. Please go ahead.
Hi. Have you specified a price point for the GameCube? And is there a minimum number of launch titles that you can guarantee?
We have not announced the GameCube price either in Japan or other markets. We announced that those would be made available closer to launch date. Again, a competitive issue. And a number of titles, I think there was an announcement that it was a minimum of five and an expectation that it was higher than that.
Thank you.
And we have another follow-up question from Victor Godinez. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering if you plan on having a sort of a RAM plug-in the way you did for the N64, where you could purchase that 4 meg a RAM upgrade and plug that in, and some games had improved performance with that. Are you planning on something similar for the GameCube?
Well, we've left our options open for that. We have first the DigiCard slots that provide for the more of the game-saving data, but more than that, using the SD card adapter, which allows us to interface with other devices that use this SD flash memory card, cellular phones, digital cameras, digital music devices, etc. There's also two high-speed serial ports and a high-speed parallel port, so we really have left our options open on this system.
Thank you.
Okay, sir, there are no further questions at this time. Please continue. Okay, we do now have a question from the line of Stuart Halpern, Bank of America Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. I think Microsoft indicated that they're looking at approximately $500 million in marketing support for the Xbox. Do you have any commentary on what kind of marketing support you're going to have for the new platforms?
Yeah, the commentary from Microsoft is approximately $500 million over the 18 months following launch. Nintendo currently spends something in excess of $400 million a year around the world in marketing existing systems. So this is not an outrageous number. It's reflective of the kind of business this is.
So your expectation is that you'd be very competitive with the kind of marketing support that the Sony and Microsoft are likely to have for their new systems?
I believe we will be, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. We have another question from John Taylor with Arcadia Investment Corporation. Please go ahead.
Hi. On the Game Boy Advance, are you guys at all working on anything which would enable it to have a calendar for kids or have any kind of PDA-type functionality other than gameplay?
Well, it's an intriguing possibility. We've looked into a lot of ideas like that in products in the future. I think that this is a very powerful machine with a 16 megahertz, 32-bit, it's getting late on this side of the pond, processor in it that would allow us to explore a lot of other functionality. But currently we are focusing on our core expertise, which is gaming.
And if software were to, the GBA, of course, is a cartridge format still?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, okay. And is there static memory in the GBA? In the sense of, can I store things in the GBA permanently?
Not within the device itself. That would be in the cartridge because the requirement for that is dependent on the particular game.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. We now have a question from Ashley Keating with GCI Canada. Please go ahead.
It's Jeff Evans from CanadaComputes.com in Toronto. And I guess the question is that in comparison to the PC gaming market, the console market and the handheld market has been pretty proprietary. But this generation of devices would seem to offer the potential, because there are various cable and wire options and a lot of computing power, for unauthorized developers to create content and then download it onto the Game Boy Advance or to publish it on a 3-inch 1.5-gig disk. You were mentioning encryption. What do you anticipate the unauthorized or hacker or gray market development of content is going to be on this platform, and what are you preparing to do about that?
Sorry, I are a technical expert here. Unfortunately, had to leave the room, but... It had nothing to do with the question. It was prior to the question being asked, but I really can't comment on that at this moment. The systems are intended for development by authorized developers. Provisions have been built into them for those considerations. The counterfeiting aspect was obviously a very, very key consideration in our selection of the media for GameCube, and
I, without getting into the technical detail, which I'm incapable of doing, will assure you that these are obviously proprietary considerations that are absolutely part of both systems.
Well, I think part of the problem is, as you say, piracy or counterfeiting. But the other gray area is people who simply want to develop their own content to use on this platform. And is there going to be some flexibility or some room for that kind of homebrew or fourth-party developer activity?
That is not the intent of the system. It's a closed architecture, and it has not been created to support that activity.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We now have a question from Susan Cantra with Popular Science. Go ahead.
Hi. You went over some of the ports, the two high-speed serial ports, high-speed parallel digital audio out. Are there any other connection ports on the back of the machine?
Again, I've got to step aside from the question. Jim Merrick, unfortunately, just prior to the last question starting, left the room, and I expect him back momentarily, but I'm incapable of answering that.
Okay, and how will the modem connect when it's the one that's going to be available at launch?
It plugs into the bottom of the cube.
So it's a proprietary connector then for the modem, specifically for the modem?
I believe it is, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our final question comes from Ed McLaughlin with GIA. Please go ahead.
I'm not sure you'll be able to answer this, but it's worth a shot. I want you to, if you can, talk a little bit about the controller design for the GameCube. It actually has fewer buttons than a Nintendo 64 controller, and talk about the force feedback options and the analog buttons.
Yeah, it does have the rumble pack built into it. It, in terms of number of buttons relative to N64, let me just hold on here a moment. Are you picking this up?
Mostly.
We've got a game. We've got a couple of gamers in the room with us here. So
instead of the force key buttons, you've got a pre-control or a key stick. More functionality than the force key buttons.
Does that help you?
Just one quick follow-up. The C buttons on the N64 controller were originally designed for camera use, but they never really came to that. Is that going to be the specific use of this stick on the controller?
Yeah, it's the intent, but it again will be a function of how the developers take advantage of that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Main, there are no further questions at this time.
Okay, thank you, everybody. We appreciate your interest, and the Nintendo site will be updated this evening and again tomorrow. We appreciate your questions, and we'll look forward to providing you with further information in the days ahead. Thanks again.
Ladies and gentlemen, this conference will be available for replay after 10:30 a.m. today through midnight Saturday, August 26th. You may access the AT&T Executive Playback Service at any time by dialing 1-800-475-6701 and entering the access code 533-100. International participants dial 320-365-3844. Those numbers again are 1-800-475-6701 and 320-365-3844, access code 533-100. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T's Executive Teleconference Service. You may now disconnect.
Andrew's Henlob, and he comes to us from Nintendo, and he is the only person here from any console game company. They were all invited, and he was the only one who said yes. So I just want to acknowledge that and make a note. Nintendo was here, nobody else was. Ken is going to talk about some of Nintendo's new games in the narrative environments genre. Help me welcome Ken Love.
You know, being the only person here from the console industry kind of gives me the advantage that when I say things that maybe disagree with the way computer games are designed, I have that excuse to fall back on. So with that start, I'd like to say that, you know, my basic speech today is about how Nintendo game design affects art direction, and really how it affects storytelling. I guess if I was to sum that up in one line, it would be, well, we don't really care about storytelling. Clearly, as we go forward through my speech, you'll see that maybe that's a little bit like a lie, but in truth, when it comes to the game design, that's just the way we make games. If you look at Nintendo's history, you have to go all the way back to pre-NES days. You know, really, game design at Nintendo starts with Mr. Miyamoto, which means it kind of started with the original Donkey Kong arcade game. Donkey Kong didn't have a very serious story to tell. You know, it was kind of babe taken by monkey, save her, watch out for barrels. That was like the whole thing. You know, and really, he had a pretty weak piece of arcade technology there to work with. So he was forced to a constraint of a very limited number of animation frames. Really, it came down to, could he make something fun with about 2K of memory? And that was pretty challenging. So I think that that's, though, driven forward in the design of games that even come out from Nintendo today. This idea that gameplay, not art, is what makes Nintendo games fun. With that in mind, I'd like to show the first piece of my videotape, which is actually the original Zelda for the NES. It is the first time that you could say, Mr. Miyamoto said, well, maybe I'll try and tell a story. It'll be kind of vague and, you know, half-assed, but it'll be a story. But at the same time, you're going to be playing a video game. So when we design games, actually, we look at what's the core element that's going to make the game fun. With a game like Zelda, it was going to be these dungeons. You have to have an overworld to link all the dungeons together, but inside each dungeon, you're playing a little puzzle. You're trying to solve the type of things that keep you trapped or keep you from getting to the boss, basically to stop you from saving your babe. You know, the driving force of most console video games, of course. Obviously, the art style was relatively primitive. You know, the evil giant dragons weren't very evil or giant, but that was about all the NES could do. Sorry. I think when you look at the way this affects our overall design, I think that priorities are a little different with console. The priority that we always go to design with is, first and foremost, play control. So we might start an experiment with a cube on the screen and realize, you know, okay, well, what do we want this cube to do? Well, we want it to jump. You know, jumping would be fun. So we experiment with jumping, and we maybe put a few holes or a couple stair steps or, you know, some things in the way of the character to see if he can dodge it. And really, with the goal being, this needs to be made fun before it's pretty, before it tells a story, before it does anything else. Picking up the controller and moving the guy around better be fun. The reason for that is we're trying to give people a value for their money. They're going to go out and spend, whatever, $40, $50, $60 on a game. They better be able to enjoy this, what is naturally just a repetitive motion, for a very long period of time. 30, 40 hours of fun jumping is something that seems a little strange, and yet there was Super Mario. It's really all you did was jump, and it was brilliant fun. The reason it worked out so well, though, is because they started out with this base set criteria. I have this character. He can walk and he can run. He can jump while he walks. He can jump while he runs, and he can jump while he's standing still. Now let's take this criteria and design an entire game around it. What NCL and Mr. Miyamoto actually do is they decide to set what they call gimmicks. They build a set of gimmicks. These are basically challenges or obstacles for the player to overcome. Then they balance the gimmicks based on where they think the player should be learning them. Well, first they should learn to jump this hole that's kind of small. And if they miss the hole that's kind of small, there'll be a hole and they can just jump out of the hole, no big deal. Later on in the game, well, maybe we'll put some spikes down in the hole and they'll take some damage. And after that, we'll put, you know, like a giant void below the hole and it'll be game over if they miss the jump. Once this set of criteria has been set up, then we hand over to the artist. Now the artist can, in the olden days, basically working with the game designer, or in a lot of cases the artist was the game designer, they would build a structure using this set of criteria and putting the beautiful art around it. Again, when you were talking about the 8-bit days, the beautiful art wasn't very beautiful. Moving forward into the N64 and in the future on GameCube and Game Boy Advance, the art will be very beautiful. But that doesn't mean we're going to change the way that we design our games. I mean, we're doing tests, you know, over the last year on early products for the GameCube, and lo and behold, we were running with Stickman, and we were, you know, jumping over gaps that were ugly, and we just really weren't caring a whole lot about what it looked like. Artists were off doing tests on backgrounds and showing how cool they could make the environment and how many brilliant texture layers they could put and, you know, great lighting and everything. And, you know, sure, we're going to have gorgeous games, as maybe I'll give you a peek in a second. But the real goal is that game needs to be fun. Now, when this comes down to building an actual environment, let's say I want to set up a room in a castle, and I want to have a fight in this room in a castle. Clearly, I can't have a bunch of furniture in the way. Maybe the players could shove it out of the way and, as they're playing, but what's most important is what the game designer felt was going to be important in this particular space. The artist can have his go and make the walls look as beautiful as he wants and do some fancy lighting tricks, but you have to have room in this environment to play and enjoy yourself. Now, one other thing I wanted to talk about before I show you my videotape is sequelization. There's a real challenge in the console industry to try and stay original, especially for Nintendo. I know that a lot of people in this industry will make 1, 2, 3, 4, 9 sequels, and you're doing kind of basically the same thing over and over and over again without a whole lot of new elements added into the game. I think probably the best example would be Mr. Miyamoto's favorite baby, which would be the Mario Brothers series. If you look at the original Super Mario Brothers, again, all you really did was jump and you chucked fireballs when you were able to get the flower. But really, that was your core primary base of gameplay. Now, although the original concept for Super Mario Bros. 2 wasn't designed by NCL, they kind of took on the project and decided to turn it into Super Mario Bros. 2. The cool core game element in that game was now that you were going to pluck things up. You were going to be able to pop flowers out of the ground or jump on an enemy, pick it up, throw it at another enemy. This was then built on to make the entire game structure for Super Mario 2. Super Mario 3, they came out, Mr. Miyamoto decided that it'd be kind of cool if he could wear these little suits. Shooting fireballs wasn't good enough. Now I want to stick a raccoon tail on so I can fly through the level, or I want to pop on some wings so I can fly higher, get farther. And then he also took in the idea of an environment that wasn't completely linear. You had a branching environment based on tricks and puzzles, which was something kind of new for the Super Mario landscape. That moved into Super Mario World at the launch of the Super NES. We were still in 2D, but now he came up with this idea of Yoshi and how Yoshi would help you get through this big, giant, branching world. And then, of course, for those who remember the game, there was Yoshi's Island, which would be my favorite. Now Mario was just a screaming baby on the back of Yoshi, and you were kind of playing him. But I thought that gameplay element was kind of interesting, and I'll talk about that for a moment. I don't know how many of you played Yoshi's Island, but it had this very bizarre idea that, you know, here's a dinosaur carrying a baby on its back. If the dinosaur takes a hit, the baby falls off. The player is supposed to be compelled to go and grab this baby. But they have this timer, and as you go through the game, you're getting more and more time that you don't have to worry about the baby. And what Mr. Miyamoto found was that, well, people just weren't caring. You know, they'd take a hit, and the baby would fall off, and they'd be like, oh, the baby's laying there, I can go grab these 4 or 5 things, I got 30 seconds, why should I care? First idea was they came up with, well, we'll give you a bonus. You have all this extra time left at the end of the world. Still, none of the people that we were using as testers really cared. They'd let baby Mario lay around and scream, no big deal. Then he realized that, well, you know, what does a baby do when a baby wants you? Baby cries. Baby cries very annoyingly, and you come running. So lo and behold, there's this ridiculously annoying cry that you get when baby Mario falls off of Yoshi's back. And interestingly enough, everybody hates it. You know, so get a hit, baby Mario falls off, starts screaming and yelling. You don't care if you have 30 seconds left. You got to shut up baby Mario as fast as you possibly can. So using a kind of different way of telling the same goal, he was able to, you know, get people to care more about having, you know, baby Mario shut up than they did about getting a bonus at the end of the level or finishing 100% or any of that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'd like to kind of close. I'm going to show you a piece of videotape that was shown at Space World. This is actually uncut, so there are a couple seconds here and sound that's a little different that was shown there. So if some of you have downloaded the Zelda video from Space World, you'll still get a small surprise. Anyway, I think this shows that In the long run, though, Nintendo does care about art. I don't want to leave you with the wrong impression that art isn't important. Clearly, we staff more artists than we do programmers, like a lot of companies nowadays. I mean, a game, working on a game now I can't mention that has 17 artists and 8 programmers. You know, clearly, I think that's about the ratio that we've been going to lately, is kind of 2-to-1. The reason is we have to build these big, giant worlds. However, like always, we start with a team of, you know, whatever, 6 or 8 people doing the core game design, and nowadays actually doing the core level layout, all in like low-poly 3D Studio Max. Then we hand off to the artists who have done lots of conceptual art. They make it all beautiful, like I'll now show you on the videotape. I left a really large amount of black between these two so that we wouldn't have a mistake of running over, so there may be 5 or 8 seconds of hesitation here. But... different than the 8-bit version. Didn't life great. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Kind of amazing how unique older audio is. So, we've had our features for this episode. We're actually going to have some shorter newsy videos coming up to closer to Denver Comic Con and to E3, starting on the 1st of June. We're leading up to Denver Comic Con. We're going to be highlighting a couple bits of cosplay from previous years of Denver Comic Con. We'll be linking to those off of our Facebook, which means they'll also show up on our Twitter. So if you're not following us on Facebook, what is wrong with you? And you need to fix that, okay? Also, follow us on Twitter. That's at DMGICE, DMGICE. You also want to follow us on YouTube. Actually, just go to DMGICE.com. There's a little thing that says, like, follow us on Facebook and Twitter and stuff. And you click those, and then you do it. You do what they say. Because you need to do what they say. Otherwise, the terrorists win. So, that's pretty much it for today's episode. Like us, subscribe, download. Download multiple copies of this. You know how when you download more than one copy to a folder, it just adds a little number at the end? See if you can make that number match with the other number of the episode title. Because why not? Just keep downloading it. Give it to your friends. Evangelize about it. Tell people about the love that Radio DMG will bring to their life. Tell them about it. Tell them about how we touch your soul in so many possibly sexual ways. Do it! Okay. And that's pretty much it. This is our show for today. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and you are now caught up.
Now I know many of you today walked in with numbers already swimming in your heads. 360, 16 by 9, 1080, 8.2 gigahertz. Well, we'd like to add one more number to the mix, and that number is 2.